It is a great pleasure to welcome to Asian Investing Summit 2022 VP Rajesh, Managing Partner and Portfolio Manager at Banyan Capital Advisors. VP has been in the capital markets since 1991, first as an IT consultant and then as an investment banker for more than 10 years, specializing in mergers and acquisitions. During his banking career with JP Morgan Chase, Deutsche Bank, Piper Jaffray, and Thomas Weisel Partners in New York and San Francisco, VP focused on technology, media, telecom, and healthcare sectors, and completed transactions worth more than $27 billion. VP relocated to India in 2007 and started reinvesting in the Indian stock market from 2008 onward. He started Banyan Capital Advisors in New Delhi in 2011 to manage outside capital using the principles espoused by the likes of Graham Buffett, Munger, Plowman, and Lynch. VP has an MBA from the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business and distinction has a BE honors degree from BITS Pilani, India. Great to have you with us today, VP. I'd like to now turn it to you. Please go ahead.
John, thank you so much for this kind introduction and thanks for having me at the Asian Investing Summit. If we turn to next page, just as a disclaimer, you know, whatever I say in this session is only for illustration purposes and should not be construed as an investment advice. And if you are interested in the idea I'm going to talk about, I suggest you consult your investment advisor and other investment managers so that there is a very clear-cut understanding that this is only for educational purposes. We do run a PMS and in India, and we may own this stock in that particular business and may decide to buy or sell based on the changing circumstances. So with that, let me go to the next slide, which is just talks about, you know, some of our key investment principles that we follow. And for us, these are just quotes from some of the folks I have respected in the business and learned a lot from. The first one comes from Warren Buffett, who has talked about this idea about looking for simple businesses where, you know, there is a lot of margin of safety, and thus the idea of looking around for one-foot bars that one can step over. From Charlie Munger comes this very great notion of inward, always inward, which means that you have to essentially look at the other side. And even if you are very enthusiastic about your idea, you have to understand what is going on in the market today, which is why the security is undervalued. The third one comes from Ben Graham, the father of value investing, who has very eloquently talked about margin of safety. And to us, that is definitely something we try and practice in our investment practice. And the idea being that, you know, you have to assume that the investment should have a minimal downside risk. And that's what we focus a lot on. The next one comes from Keynes, who has said this very eloquently, that market can remain irrational longer than you can stay solvent. And to us, it means two things. One, at the portfolio level, don't use leverage. And even in the companies that we invest in, aside from financials, we look for companies that have minimal leverage unless until there are some unique circumstances. And the last one comes from Horace, which has been talked about quite a few places, which says that many shall be restored that now are fallen, and many shall fall that now are in honor. So we love to focus on the first one, where you find the ideas which used to be in vogue previously, let's say 3-4 years ago, and now they are trading at a very cheap valuation because of some business development in their journey of the company, and therefore they're available quite cheaply. On the next slide, we just talk about our strategy. So we look at small and mid caps in India, and most of our allocation, 80% of the allocation, is in 20 stocks or less. We also invest opportunistically in large caps, special situations, and fixed income securities. On the next slide, John. Yeah. And then we obviously do deep fundamental analysis of the investments. And more importantly, we also look at the industry very closely and its peer set to have a very nuanced understanding of what is going on in terms of the competitive landscape in that particular industry. We diversify across industry sectors. Typically, five or six sectors are a big chunk of our investment and capital allocation. In terms of risk, we don't invest more than 10% in one security, and then the sector allocation is limited to 25%. And when it comes to valuation, you know, we think of it in two baskets. One is for the quality businesses, and one is for average businesses. So for the average businesses, we are always looking to buy them very cheaply, whether the valuation multiples are in the bottom decile or bottom quartile. That's sort of our favorite place in terms of valuation for average businesses. For the quality businesses, because there is you know, certain characteristics to their business, they are never really going to be that cheap. So therefore, we look at, you know, around the median multiple. That's really our sort of the valuation band for quality businesses. So with that, let me talk about the idea that I'm discussing today. It's KRBL, and we think it's a high quality business, but for certain reasons, it is trading at a very cheap valuation currently. So our investment rationale on the next slide is that KRBL is, you know, basmati rice producer, and it has a lot of defensible moats. Now, I will cover basmati rice in the next slide, but here what I want to emphasize is that it has defensible moats because a lot of companies like Pepsi, Hindustan Unilever, which is a subsidiary of Unilever, Olam, etc., have entered in this market and exited this market over the last 10, 20 years. And Indian companies like ITC have also entered this segment, but have not been able to scale up in a profitable manner and exited as well. So, in that sense, because KRBL is a market leader in this basmati rice category in India, they clearly have a very defensible moat vis-à-vis their competitors in the market, as well as folks like these that I just mentioned who have tried to get into that segment. The second reason why we like this is that after, you know, reducing its debt for the last 5, 6 years, the management, or I should say the promoter family, is focused on growing the business faster than what it has been in the prior 5, 10 years. So from 9% growth, they are looking to grow the business around 10 to 15% with organic as well as inorganic growth. And I'll talk about some of those drivers. It's a brand business, so obviously it's very well known. Their brand is very well known in India and in some of the overseas countries where they have a large market share. Their balance sheet is something that is very attractive because if you go back 5 or 10 years ago, it used to have debt primarily for working capital reasons, and now, you know, they have essentially paid it down almost completely over the last few years, and they're using their internal accruals for the working capital purposes as well. And obviously, it is a prodigious cash flow machine. It is run by a very competent promoter family as well, and we'll get into the detail of how long these guys have been at this business, which really gives us the comfort that these folks have a very good understanding of the marketplace of basmati rice. And given the valuations where they are today, I think one can make a very good IRR over the next few years in this particular investment. So we'll go and talk about that as well. So what does KRBL do? As you can see, this is their basmati rice pack. And basmati is a GI label that is given to rice produced in certain parts of the world, which are mostly in India. And a few places in Pakistan, but India is a very dominant producer of this basmati rice. I think in the US also it is available in several Indian grocery stores, perhaps, and I think it's also available in Costco, not India Gate, but some other varieties. And it's considered the king of rice because it is very flavorful and it has a wonderful fragrance as well. So KRBL has this brand called India Gate, which is at the very, very top end in the Indian market. On the next slide, just a quick business overview to set the context. They did about 4,000 crores of revenue in last financial year. 87% of that came from basmati rice, and then the rest from non-basmati rice and other health food segments that they are working to create. Their revenue is well diversified. About 50% is domestic and 50% is from exports. And they export to more than 80 countries, but the real place where they sell their rice the most is the Middle East and the GCC countries. Among the brands that they have, India Gate, as I said in the previous slide, it's the largest brand that they have, and it's about 67% of their branded basmati portfolio. And it is sold both here as well as internationally. Since they are the largest market share, they have 38% market share in India in the branded basmati rice and about 25% in the export market. In terms of their milling capacity, they have about 1.2 million tons of milling capacity, and they are operating around 60% utilization right now. So, in terms of their distribution network, they are working with 4 lakh retail outlets and 3,800 modern trade stores all over India. So, as they have continued to expand in different types of rice and different grades of basmati rice, they have created more brands. And after India Gate, Unity and Noor Jahan are some of the other brands which are sort of mass affluent brands, if you will. And they also have some energy assets which they essentially put together for captive power, and the rest is being sold to the electricity boards, which is another source of revenue in the business. But obviously, that is less important in the overall story. So if you go to the next slide, then there are just a quick points on the basmati rice industry. Indian domestic consumption is around 2.5 million metric tons, and the exports are around 4.4 million metric tons. And what is very interesting is that out of 2.5 million, only 1.5 is branded, which is where KRBL features, and the rest of it is all loose rice. And as the market develops in India, the unbranded basmati rice is becoming less important. So over the next 10 years, 20 years, you will see this 1.5 million metric tons coming down and this 1 million metric ton going up. And then the biggest change that happened was this new variety that was introduced back in 2003, which became very, very popular from 2008 onwards. So on the next slide, I just talk about why, you know, KRBL has these defensible moats. One thing I talked about is the balance sheet that they have. So they have the largest balance sheet in this business they have in terms of their inventory, and therefore they are able to get the loans from the banks at a very reasonable rates to buy the paddy prices, paddy, sorry, during the season at a low price. And then the whole game is that they age it and then they sell it at a premium as basmati rice. So because the paddy prices are volatile, you have to be really understanding the dynamics of that market to buy it at the right price across the producing belt of Punjab, Haryana, et cetera. So that's really one of the very moats, or very, if we were to say their core competency is to make sure you are buying it at the right prices during the season when it becomes available. On the other side, their brands typically command 15% price premium in the domestic market, and their export realizations are also higher. One thing which they have done very interesting is that they have connected directly with the farmers, and they help them plant paddy and give them high-quality supply of seeds, so that on the flip side, they're able to buy the produce as well. So that direct contact also helps them understand what is happening at the ground level on the supply side for or their raw material, basically. And as I had mentioned earlier, that they have 4 lakh retail outlets versus their closest pure play peer, which is LT Foods, has only 1.37 lakhs. So that in itself tells you how how strong their market position is. And then they do have an in-house R&D department, which is always working on these seeds. And that's really what they take a lot of pride in, that their particular seed varietal was earlier rejected, and then it became most popular basmati rice. And the other point to note is that their employee cost to sales ratio is very low because all the plants are automated, and it helps them just be more efficient around their production. So from this raw material side, from the marketplace side, from the cost of production, et cetera, what you find is that KRBL is one of the very best in this industry. On the next slide, I talk about the promoter family. The three brothers, Mr. Anil Kumar Mittal, Mr. Arun Kumar Gupta, and Mr. Anup Kumar Gupta, they own 60% in the business, and they are very much involved in day-to-day business. But at the same time, they are also cultivating the next generation, which are quite involved in the day-to-day operations as well. And they have always been focused on profitable growth. So in that sense, unlike other rice guys who made money and diversified into unrelated areas like real estate, these guys have always stayed in the rice business and continue to make KRBL stronger. They have the very strong track record of understanding the paddy market and the procurement cycle related to that, and therefore they are able to capture a lot of inventory gains from time to time in the business. And now they're working on achieving 8,000 crore of revenues. As I said, they did 4,000 crore, so they are looking to double that in the next few years. And in their last call, they had talked about that they will come out with a plan as to how they will get from 4,000 to 8,000 crore. But we have obviously in our modeling taken a more realistic estimate based on just the current kind of growth that they can do from various drivers that we think of. On the next slide, this is what I was saying earlier, that if you think about the entry barriers, it will sound very easy that anybody can go to the market, wholesale market, and buy paddy, age it, and then sell it as a branded rice. But when you listen to their competitors, and here are some comments from Olam, Marico, which is a local Indian FMC staples company, and then Chaman Lal Sethia, which is a direct competitor. So when you read through these comments, you will realize that it is not easy at all. It takes a lot of time to build the know-how in this business and to build the brand in the market. So for example, if I just take this comment from Chaman Lal Sethia, last one, his rice is selling at $300 to $500 per ton higher than others, because they have built up, and Chaman Lal has a long way to go. So the brand, obviously, we all know, is a very, very strong moat by itself. And I think in this particular market, because KRBL has that, it definitely commands a premium over others. And in comments of Olam and Marico, it comes out very clearly that they don't understand this market very well, and therefore they have either not entered, or if entered, they have exited here. And so next slide, page 13, is just about how management views these entry barriers. They talk about being in this business for more than 50 years to have a very good handle on this. And then the fact that, you know, they have to go around 300 to 400 mandis are the wholesale markets and go buy different quantities, whatever they can get in those markets. The other important thing is because when the procurement cycle starts, you have to borrow to buy. And therefore, the high interest cost can be a major factor if you don't know what you're doing. And these guys have been able to manage that particular area extremely well. And as I said earlier, over a period of time, what they have done is rather than borrowing from the banks, they have reduced that borrowing and used their profits to continue to make their balance sheet stronger, such that the overall debt is coming down, even though their inventory and their revenues have gone up over the last 5-10 years. So those are some of the things that we feel these guys have a very strong hold in the marketplace. On the next slide, I talk about what's been missing in this story. And this just shows you their revenues over the last 6 years or so. 6 year CAGR is literally 4%, and with a lot of volatility from year to year. And each year had one reason or the other, which we have highlighted here. But the main point is, if you look at the margin line, in fiscal year 17, it jumped significantly to 20.6% EBITDA margin from 15.5% in fiscal year 16. And that's because they made a very conscious choice to get away from some of the less profitable business. And you can see it in the revenue number. The revenue declined by 8%, yet the margin went up by almost 500 basis points, more than 500 basis points. And the same thing in the next year, they again had some very good contracts in the following year, in fiscal year 18. But overall, this seems like a business where at 4,000 crore of revenue, you can produce around 20% of EBITDA. And that's a very solid business from a cash flow generation standpoint. But the key takeaway is that, one, their revenues have been sort of growing at a very slow rate of 4% in the last 5-6 years. And the EBITDA margin have stepped up from low levels of 15-16% to 20% or thereabouts. Now, what we think is going to happen, on next slide, we talk about the drivers that we are that makes us excited about this particular investment. So one is the domestic basmati rice. So if you look at their growth, it has been uneven. Even if you exclude fiscal year 21, it was down in fiscal year 18 and then sort of growing from there. But what they are doing right now to accelerate this growth is to add another brand called Unity, which I mentioned earlier, to capture the mass and mid-level price points. So the price point for their main brand, which is India Gate, is higher, and therefore they are only getting the premium market. Now they have introduced this new brand, Unity, to get to the next segment. The second thing that they are doing is to increase the number of distributors, so their reach is much more than what they are doing today. So just to give you an example, Hindustan Unilever, which has a retail reach of 80 lakh outlets, or call it 8 million outlets, these guys are only at 0.4. So that's the big delta that you one has to think about. And obviously, you don't need to be at 8 million outlets to sell basmati rice, but there is a huge scope to expand that footprint. And as that footprint increases, these guys will be able to grow faster. And they are now consciously working in that direction. The third, which is more of a COVID impact, is the Horeca segment, which is your hotel, restaurants, and catering business. That got decimated because of COVID. And that is, as it starts to come back, that will aid the growth as well. So this business, which is basically in this 1800 kind of range, 1800 crore kind of range on the domestic side, could start growing much faster than what the growth has been. So that's one of the key drivers that we are looking for. The second one is the export side. So they are now targeting new countries. Earlier, they were big in Saudi Arabia and Iran. And in Saudi Arabia, they did have a setback. They had to disengage with their previous distributor over there. And now they have just appointed a new distributor. And Saudi Arabia was around, I would say, around 15% of their total revenues. So, and very profitable. So that's the reason why this particular transition has been problematic for the company, at least in this current financial year. So I think this is a fixable problem which they are fixing, and the volume should start to come back. In Iran, because of the sanctions, they lost about 12% of their overall revenue in the last couple of years. So as that particular issue gets settled down, because Indian government is trying to do some kind of a special deal with Iran, and if that comes to fruition, then that could be another growth driver that can come back. And then they are also introduced this Nurjahan brand, something like what they have done with Unity in the domestic market. So that way, there is another brand which is less expensive than their flagship brand in these export markets as well. So we think with this particular, these efforts that they are doing, targeting new countries, Saudi Arabia and Iran coming back, and introduction of a less premium basmati rice brand will aid their growth in the future years. And then the third thing that the company is very excited about is, and we are not convinced, frankly, but I just talk about it here for the sake of completeness. When they think about their 8,000 crore business, they think they can generate 1,000 to 1,500 crores from this particular segment, which is essentially taking the local rice and packaging that in, let's say it is, if a varietal called Sona Masoori rice in Karnataka, or let's say Gobind Bhog rice in West Bengal. So they are looking to create a use the India Gate brand for these type of rice categories. And then they are trying to do some new products like idli rice, etc. So these are all things that they are working on. They have been working on for the last few years, but nothing has scaled up to a point where you can really feel that this could be a game changer. But yet management believes that they can create 1,000 crore of business out of this. And then they also are open for inorganic acquisition to fast track growth. So this is the third growth driver, which is the non-basmati rice part. So now switching gears, if you look at the financial metrics of this company on the next slide, it's about market capitalization of 5,400 crore market cap as of a couple of days ago. And then we use cash and equivalents of 557 because, as I said, their balance sheet is very high on debt in September. So we have taken the average of certain period to come up with this. And then their total debt is, I'm sorry, their cash is 557 crores. Their total debt is 203 crores. And this used to be much larger 5 or 10 years ago. But because they don't pay much of dividend, they have just plowed back the profits into the business, this number has come down significantly. So their enterprise value is roughly around 5,000 crore, trading at EV to EBIT of 7 times and a PE multiple of 11 times. And the 7 time EV to EBITDA is roughly 10% below its 10-year median multiple EBITDA. And on the next slide, what we talk about how this company has traded historically. So if you have to almost take the past 12 years and put them in different buckets to see what kind of growth they were doing and what kind of margins they had. So for example, in first row, we talk about fiscal year 10 to fiscal year 2016, where the revenue growth was high, but the average EBITDA margin was around 15%. And at that point and during that period, the stock was also not well discovered. So its median EBITDA multiple was 5.7 times, and the 25th percentile was 8 times. If you come down to the third row, which is fiscal year 18 to year to date, they have a low growth of 6.6%, but the margins on an average were around 19.4%. And the median multiple was 7.6%, with the 25th percentile at 9.6%. So this was the low growth phase, right? And no margin expansion because that happened in the previous period. So if you put all that together, long-term period, right, their growth has been around 10% and the margin have improved to 18.3%. And the median multiple is around 7.7 with the 25th percentile at 12.3. So what it shows is that during the period where it is, it was in a slow growth mode, but the margin were expanding, the multiple was quite high. And in the periods where multiple, where margin was stable at the higher level, but the growth was low, then the then the multiple also came down, which is sort of intuitive, but we just wanted to parse the data to make sure that this is what the data is also showing. And then, you know, if we go to the next slide, so we made some assumptions to do the projections for next 4 years and understand what it will look like. So if you remember, the business has grown by about 10% in the last 10 years. So in the base case, we assumed around 10% growth. In bear case, we assumed what we have seen over the last 4 or 5 years, around 6.5% growth. And in the bull case, we assume that if the company is guiding 10 to 15%, let's just assume 12% is the best that they can achieve. And in the EBITDA margin, we have been more in a zone of 18 to 20% because I think the business can continue to be in this range. So when we look at the average ROE that comes out of this kind of modeling, you will see on the base case around 14%. And EV to EBITDA, we have assumed 8.3% because, as I said in the previous slide, the 10-year median is 7.7. And if you assume that a little bump up to that, 8.3 looks very reasonable. And we go through the rationale of our bull case revenues and base case, bear case in this slide and next, but I won't go through each point. Suffice to say that we have looked at the historical numbers and then did modeling to make sure our numbers are conservative than the management. So for example, in bull case, management is guiding for 8,000 crore. We have assumed that they will reach 7,000 crore in the bull case. And if you skip to next slide after that, in the financial projection, next, yeah. So here in, you can see, you know, what the numbers look like. So from 4,000 crore that they are doing or that they did last year, we think in the base case, they will get to 6,264 crores. And in bull case, maybe 7,025 crores. But as you can see, the PAT will be very strong. In bull case, it could be 1,000 crore and it could be 855 crores in our base case scenario. So that's the kind of business this is, where there is a lot of profitability. And if there is a little bit of growth, then you can have a phenomenal outcome. So our bear case is EPS of 30 rupees in fiscal year 26, roughly around 36 rupees in base case and 42 rupees in bull case. And on the next slide, when we apply the multiples that we had previously used, EV to EBITDA, what it shows is that you can have at the current value of 228 rupees, in the base case, the IRR is around 18.5%. And what I like about this is that even in the bear case, your downside is protected and you are at 5% IRR. And 5% IRR in a situation where there is hardly any improvement in the revenue growth. And the EBITDA margin is also at the lower end of what we have observed in the last 4 or 5 years. So with the worst case scenario, you still are not going to lose money in an investment like this. In the bull case, you know, if things go well, the IRR can be as high as 35%. And then we have used some probability of each scenario. So the overall expected IRR comes to a little north of 20%. And so that's what excites me about this investment, that it is a very strong business. It has some visible growth drivers. The valuation looks reasonable. And then in terms of catalyst, we think ED case can become a non-issue. And I did not address ED case, but I'll do that in the next slide. if the growth starts to come back, as I said, you know, then the multiple can expand here further. And if the company starts to do some buyback, that again will instill the confidence among the investors. So we think that as their balance sheet becomes more cash rich, and if they are not able to do any acquisition, then that cash may be used to do a buyback in this period between now and fiscal year 26. So what are the concerns, right? This is what I want to take the flip side and go to that investment principle of invert, always invert. So this is really, you know, the focus on from that particular point of view. So one concern is obviously the stagnation in revenue, because the growth has been very low in the last 6 years. And we had talked about, you know, what are the growth drivers that we are focused on and what we think management is actually executing on, especially the growth drivers in the domestic market and the export market. So I think to some extent, this issue will be addressed by that. The second issue is that management had given this guidance in back in fiscal year 14 that they will be 5,000 crore in the near future. And they haven't reached that 5,000 crore till now. They had introduced the health food category products in fiscal year 17, but in the last 5 years, that business has not really shown any traction. So you can, if you, and our view is that that's why we are discounting these comments. And that's why when the promoter says that they can do 8,000 crore, we are assuming bull case is 7,000 crore. And base case is more realistic, 6,400 crore. So we are addressing that concern in our modeling, and still the IRR looks very attractive. Now the legal issue, which is the enforcement directorate case against one of the promoters, Mr. Anup Gupta, you know, there has been some concerns around that. And when we have looked at the track record of the enforcement directorate, it has been very poor, because they have initiated 2,300 cases over the last 14 years, but only have achieved 15 convictions. But in the short term, obviously, it scares the hell out of the investors. And therefore, you know, everybody stays away from that. And in this scenario, from our understanding by talking to various folks, we think this is going to be a non-issue going forward. The other thing is that a promoter which has not really bought very many shares in the last, you know, 2 years, they have done two buybacks where they have increased their own stake. And in the first buyback, which they did between December 2019 and March 2020, just before the COVID, they bought it at 253 rupees. And very recently, last in Feb 2022, they bought another 8 lakh shares at 193 rupees and change. So that's what we think, you know, at least the promoters are showing confidence by buying back in their own personal names and increasing their holding in the company by one percentage point, which they had never done in many, many years. So that just tells us that, you know, this ED case will go away. And you know, the more fundamentally, it has not impacted the business fundamentals. The mill is running just as it was previously. They continue to be dominant in the shelf spaces. They continue to export the product. So it's not that the operations have been impacted by this, and that's what we find most comfort in. And the last concern is that there is hardly any FIIs and mutual funds invested in this business. And our view is that's because of this ED case. I think once this starts to go away, or at least it seems like it is going away, then the institutional investors will also look at it favorably. So in my last slide, I talk about what are the key monitorables and risks. So I think, as I talked previously also, the biggest challenge is that what they have done, 5% type of growth in the last 5-6 years, whether from that low growth, can they jump to, let's say, 10 or 12% kind of growth? So that's one thing which one has to monitor. Obviously, development in the ED case is the second one. The third is the Iran and Saudi Arabia, which are very profitable markets to them. I think Saudi Arabia should come back online this year, and I think that will increase their revenue and profitability. I think Iran, to me, is less certain this year, but perhaps next year it should also come back, and then again it will give a bump to their revenues and profitability. And then whether they can maintain the margins along with this growth that they are promising, especially on the non-basmati rice type varieties. So I would say overall, if you think about this business, it's a very solid business going through some tough times because of a couple of these reasons that I talked about. And none of them are permanent threat to the business, and that's really the key point. All of these are temporary, and over the next 2 years or 3 years, I think you will see this business coming out, and hopefully, we are hoping it will make significant money for us and our investors. So, with that, John, I will stop here and see if you have any questions, comments, or feedback.
VP, thank you so much for the presentation. Perhaps just on a capital allocation, how would you like the company to allocate the free cash that will come in the future?
That's a very good question, John. And I think there are two, three things I see these guys doing. One is they will either go for an acquisition, which is in the non-basmati category. So that will be very helpful because these guys are solid operators and they have the distribution in India and abroad. So an acquisition will be one clear articulated use, and I see them doing that. But at the same time, I also trust this family that they will do the right thing because that's what they have done historically. If the valuations are out of sync, they have moved on. They have not gone for those acquisitions. The second use will be, as I touched upon, is the buyback. So once they become debt-free, they can also do the buybacks. Number three is the inventory because this business is all about buying paddy in the market, storing it, seasoning it, aging it, and then selling it on the other side, right? So to the extent you have more cash on your balance sheet, you can buy more in the mandis, in the wholesale markets, that is, and expand your inventory. So those are the three things where I see them deploying the excess cash over the next 2, 3 years as it builds up on the balance sheet.
And how should we think about the export market in terms of the ultimate size that it can get to, and what portion of revenue it could contribute in the long term?
Yeah, so I think if you go to slide 16, right, they are doing about 0.3 million tons of exports right now, and Indian market is exporting roughly 4.4 million, right? So you can see that they're not even 10% of the exports from India. So one thing personally I would like to see here is that they start to export again to Europe and to the US because they are obviously larger markets in terms of number of people. But obviously, from basmati rice consumption standpoint, Middle East and GCC are bigger. But I think if they continue to expand in those markets, then this can become a significantly larger portion. To me, I think I haven't really pegged them for a certain number in the future. My view is that if they just, first of all, if they get back Iran and get back Saudi Arabia, that in itself will expand their volumes tremendously. So the moment I think in the next 5 years, I will not be surprised if they become 15 to 20% of the overall export market. So let's say out of 4.4 million tons, they could be 0.8 or so, which is basically more than double from where they are, and that's a possibility.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I will leave it there, VP. I would just encourage our members to feel free to follow up with any further thoughts or questions, thank you for sharing your contact information here on the screen. And thank you very much for taking the time to be with us again and present this investment thesis.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me. And I always enjoy presenting at your conferences and look forward to the next one. Take care.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.